Hello, I'm Duke Eatman. This is number 0430, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0430. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Daniel Morgan Jones, CEO and founder of the Church of Jediism, is back to talk about his new book, Become the Force.
The book aims to educate people to understanding the philosophy of the Force and everything with the Star Wars relationship. So basically, it's kind of like modern philosophy and modern spirituality and self-discovery, but with Star Wars as a reference point, which is super cool.
Memory expert Dave Farrow talks about memory tournaments and how technology might be making our memories a little soft.
Harvard and Columbia did studies on this, shows that because we can search for information, have it at our fingertips, we're not forced to hold on to it. Even the act of holding on to a phone number in the old-fashioned address books, you know, where you'd look at a phone number and then you'd hold it in your head long enough for you to dial it in. Especially if you can think back to one of those rotary phones where it took you longer, you had to hold the number in your head for just those few seconds longer. That actually stimulated our memory. We've actually lost about 20% of our memory nationally since the 80s, early 90s to today, mainly due to technology making things easier.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. One of the stories he shares is about the removal of some refrigerators from New York City Housing Authority buildings.
The security is not too well because some special investigators from that department wanted to see whether or not they could come here in the middle of the day and take away some of the refrigerators. Just, you know, say, hi, we're here to take away your refrigerator. And so they'd show up at the building and they'd say, hi, we're here to take away your refrigerator. And they take it away, showing that there really was no security in the building.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0430 was Duke Eatman, broadcaster, writer, and author of Chuck D Presents This Day in Rap and Hip-Hop History. Thank you very much, Duke, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. You can find links, by the way, to his book on our website at thestufffile.com. Just look for the What's On page for this show, which you just heard Duke mention, 0430, and you'll find the link. Again, thank you very much, Duke, for doing the guest slate on this program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Now, speaking of books, I just want to take a brief moment to thank Donnie and Grace. They are the hosts of In Your Face with Donnie and Grace. Great show program name, by the way. They invited me to talk about my book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. Those two were an absolute hoot. Now, I've also put links into the hour-long chat that I had with them on the Stuff File program Facebook page, and it's also on my website. You can go to thestufffile.com so you can give a listen to it at your leisure. And by the way, you can purchase my book, which, like the title says, features great conversations with the likes of Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer, Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner, Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar, a host of TV icons like Buddy Ebsen, Bob Denver, Dick Van Patten, Gary Coleman, and more, plus two guys who actually left their footprints on the moon. So check it out. It's available at Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at the publisher's website of BearManorMedia.com. And, of course, you'll find the links for the book on our website at TheStuffFile.com. So buy the book. What are you waiting for? By the way, it makes a lovely Christmas gift, especially for someone who is a fan of old Hollywood and television and the like. There you go. Okay, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Now, this story is twisted in so many ways and on so many levels, so try to keep up. A court ordered a woman to get counseling after admitting to having sex with her mother and then getting married to her, according to court documents in Oklahoma. 26-year-old Misty Velvet Dawn Spann of Duncan pleaded guilty to incest at the Stevens County District Court. Spann's mother, 44-year-old Patricia Ann Spann, was also charged with incest. Patricia pleaded not guilty to the charge and is set to go on trial at a later date. Now, according to the police investigation, Patricia lost custody of her three children and they lived with a grandparent. Recently, the children reunited with their mother. Patricia married one of her sons, but claimed that she was not having sex with him. A court annulled that marriage. Patricia then started spending time with Misty. Patricia told a Department of Human Services worker that she and her daughter hit it off instantly. The two then got married. Patricia claimed that she was not violating any laws because her name was not listed on her daughter's birth certificate. I'm sure there's a good reason for that. Yeah. After police arrested Misty, she filed for an annulment. Misty told the court that her mother led her to believe that they were not committing any crime by getting married and having sex. Wow. Clearly, at the core of this family dynamic is a lack of education. Also, you have a family tree that clearly needs some branches trimmed. Yikes. Okay, the clerk at a convenience store in Largo, Florida, hit the silent alarm at 1:22 a.m., and sure enough, the robber was still there when police arrived. Now, rather than burst in and perhaps provoke a violent confrontation that could endanger innocent people inside, police simply surrounded the store and waited for the robber to come out. It took an hour, but eventually the man left, pushing a shopping cart full of stolen merchandise. The robber was wearing a mask, a scuba diver's mask. Police arrested 31-year-old Jeffrey Chad Davis, who hadn't noticed the police were waiting for him. A scuba mask, huh? Did he have a getaway diver waiting outside? Yeah. A husband and wife in Texas were surprised to find a mess in one of their bedrooms. Terry Watkins of Corsicana said that his wife and pets were home when she heard a large explosion. She walked into the bedroom where she noticed that the fridge's door blew off and prune juice was everywhere. Well, prune juice can often lead to explosions, I hear. Watkins said that he and his wife had been shopping daily at their neighborhood Brookshire's supermarket for several years. Last month, Watkins bought a bottle of Brookshire's prune juice. The bottle of prune juice was placed inside a mini fridge in the bedroom. The bottle had been opened, and about one cup of prune juice was consumed when it suddenly exploded. The explosion blew off the fridge door and scattered prune juice in the bedroom. Watkins filed a complaint with Brookshire's, and they offered him a free bottle of prune juice. Yeah, he rejected the offer because he did not want another bomb in his house, Watkins said. Okay, the real mystery in this story is, besides student dorms, who keeps a refrigerator in a bedroom? Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Jack and Patricia Mulkeen were asleep in their Yarmouth, Massachusetts home when their dog started barking at around 2 a.m. Patricia figured the dog saw a raccoon through the window, so she grabbed a flashlight and went to investigate. She sleeps in the buff and didn't bother to put on any clothes. Why bother for a raccoon, right? But when she got to her dining room, she spotted an intruder there. I wasn't frightened. I was just surprised, she said. The man could see her, too. Sorry, ma'am, he said, and went out how he came in, via the cellar. Jack points out that his wife is 91 years old and not wearing a stitch. That'd be enough to make him faint, he said. It's a shock. They called police, who quickly found 28-year-old Joseph M. Parent and charged him with breaking and entering with intent to commit a felon and drug possession. Well, if all it takes to stop a criminal in his tracks is a 91-year-old naked woman, then every home should have one. Anyway, Let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? We've had Daniel Morgan Jones on the program before. He's the highest-ranking member of the Church of Jediism in the UK. We spoke to him back in 2010 when they were recruiting Americans, and again in 2015 when they released a Star Wars song in aid of promoting the Jedi Church. Well, now they have a book out called Become the Force, 9 Lessons on How to Live as a Jediist Master. Daniel Morgan joins us on the line right now via Skype from the UK. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Just tickety-boo. Thank you very much for being on the program with us once again. So how many years now has it been that the Church of Jediism has actually been in force?
This is the 10th consecutive year, so it's marking a 10-year kind of anniversary of this movement and the idea. So, yeah, the book is coming out at just a great time.
I know we've talked to you many times over that 10-year period, but one of the things I'm sure you get asked about a lot, and I'll just put it out there right now, when you first started this thing, I mean, I know it's become a serious endeavor, but when you first started this thing, was it something you had taken seriously, or was it always something that you believed in full-heartedly from the start?
It's always been something I think I believed in full-heartedly from the start. I think that it's evolved definitely into something larger, and the scale of it has obviously grown. But I think I've always been like, you know, it's always been the same for me. It's always been about the Force and you know, exploiting that to its full potential.
Okay, so Becoming the Force, the book, 9 Lessons on How to Live as a Jediist Master. What made you decide to write this book now, and what will we learn from it?
Well, the idea to write the book came way back in like 2009 or something. I was approached by HarperCollins and they wanted me to write a book, but I don't think I was ready for it back then, so I decided to not go ahead with it back then. And then now I feel like I'm a bit older, I've had more experience, the church is 10 years old, and I thought now was the time to write the book. So that's why you know, we decided that we should go ahead and write the book. So it's always been something that had been there, you know, in the pipeline. And the book aims to educate people to understanding the philosophy of the Force and everything with the Star Wars relationship. So basically, it's kind of like modern philosophy and modern spirituality and self-discovery, but with Star Wars as a reference point, which is super cool. And the book has 9 lessons in there to get the person who's reading it, the reader, to become like a Jedi Master. You know, once they've read the book, they'll be at like square one. I'm a Jedi Master and I can do, you know, I'm in control of my universe, and how do we do, you know, the cool good things in the world to bring peace. So that's the idea of it.
Obviously, you have a lot of fans who are fans of the Star Wars films, but what about those who are not? Have you reached out to people who are not necessarily Star Wars fans, and what do they think of the Church of Jediism?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, we have a lot of fans, excuse me, we have a lot of members and fans who are not particularly sci-fi fanatics or Star Wars fanatics. You know, they're just people who are looking for a new purpose in life, looking for a new way to live on the planet and how to help people. And that's one of the things that we try and put out as well, as like a good message for helping people. So the mass majority of our fans or members, or whatever you want to call them, followers if you like, they are not Star Wars fans. And it's cool. It's greatly received. They love the whole idea, and they don't feel that they need to be a Star Wars fan to really get what we're about. And I think that's one of the nice things about what we're doing with this movement.
Now, in the 10 years that you've had the Church of Jediism, one of the things that has happened with the franchise itself is that it has changed hands. It has moved on from the world of Fox to the world of Disney, which is now part of. Have you had any connection at all, or any relationship with the people who have put out the Star Wars movies, and has that changed at all, if so, over the years?
Well, in terms of relationships, I do know I'm friends with some of the actors, so like Warwick Davis, one of the most famous actors in there, I'm friends with him, and I did a TV show with Warwick a couple of years ago now, and that was cool. And the relationship has never, you know, tarnished, nothing to do with Disney's handover or anything like that. I do know a guy called Kyle Newman, who's done a little bit with Star Wars over the past, and I know his wife Jamie King has been in, I think she was in the animated series as one of the voices, but I'm still really cool friends with Kyle. But in terms of like legally or professionally, I've not ever had any dealings with Lucasfilm or Fox or anything like that. But we did have to consult with Disney's legal team when creating this book, because the publisher and I wanted to make sure we were above board with everything and that we weren't going to be treading in any muddy water, basically. So that was all above board.
Okay, what about philosophically? And the reason why I ask that is anytime you have any kind of long-standing franchise, be it Star Trek, Star Wars, even James Bond, no matter what it is, it changes over the years, and those who may have liked it in the beginning may feel differently about it the way it has morphed into something else down the road. In this case, we're talking about something that is literally a church in your case. So you have a philosophy that is based on the way the films were depicted when you first saw them. Has your interpretation or has your feelings about the Star Wars canon changed as they've progressed over the years?
No, not at all. I think when Lucas redid he did three new films, The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith, I think they were bad ideas to how he did them. And it did rock the boat a little bit for Star Wars fans in terms of, like, you know, he used green screen, there was no models and stuff, and people kind of, you know, gutted about that. But at the end of the day, those movies gave us a good insight to the Jedi and the Force as a whole, and, like, you can see the temple for the first time, and you learn so much more about the Jedi, and I think people really liked that. And to me, that was great because it opened the doors to many different kind of philosophical aspects. But again, the fans kind of loved it because it was more Star Wars. And that's what Star Wars fans, because they've had three films, you know, since the 70s, they really want more. And I think it's now more than ever, it's their time to shine. So I think every time you have new Star Wars movies or a new Star Wars kind of franchise bursting out, the fans are going to love it because they've always been waiting for it to happen. So I think it's only a good thing that there's more and more content coming up from Disney.
Okay, so you've written the book Become the Force, and obviously we've talked over the years, this has been a life-changing situation for you. For you, what was the aha moment when you first saw Star Wars? What did it do for you?
Star Wars, it kind of made me realize that anybody could become a hero, and it was nothing to do with superpowers or flying. It was to do with the inner calm or the universe speaking to you through the universal life force, and I found that fascinating and encapsulating. So I was like, wow, you know, this is amazing. And I loved it because as a kid, everybody loves science fiction because it's just fun, isn't it? But from a person with a curious mind such as my own, I found the philosophy part of it just overwhelmingly amazing.
As I said, you know, a decade has gone by, and this is something you take seriously. You've been around now for 10 years. As you mentioned earlier, yes, it's something you took very serious from the beginning. Are people now taking you 10 years in more serious about this than they were when you first started?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that more people now actually treat us with much more respect, I guess, and it's not laughed at, and I don't get kind of people making pokey comments. They're just kind of accepting it for what it is, and they really enjoy what we're doing.
Have you heard from other more established organized religions? Because, you know, sometimes one of the things I find most interesting is that almost all religious doctrines teach peace and harmony, but they don't really like it when someone, for lack of a better term, mows on their own yard.
Yeah, I guess I know what you mean. I think we've had a bunch of the Christianity-based religions don't like it. They always think it's a bit weird, and they always put damn on it, like they do most other religions. Like you said, if it's not them, they don't really want to know. But I've had some positive stuff. I mean, I know a bunch of people who are like, you know, Muslim or Christians, and they're cool about it. They just find it that they think it's like something fun that I do, so it kind of doesn't really infringe on anything they do. But at the end of the day, I think it's just nice to see people accepting that other people can follow different philosophical paths or spiritual paths, you know.
I find it interesting that the publisher came to you several years ago and you only just now decided to write this book. Were you surprised that there was interest from an established publisher back in the day when you first started this?
I mean, you would think that I would be very surprised, but unfortunately it wasn't much of a surprise, because the overwhelming popularity that the movement gained when I first set it up, because of how bizarre and outrageous it sounded, I was just getting all kinds of stuff. You know, I've done Time Magazine, I've been on Fox News, CNN, you know, I've been on everything you can think of, you know. And so to have a book publisher that big come and talk to us was no kind of shocker, because I'm not being big-headed, it was just kind of, I was so used to that magnitude of attention, it didn't really shock me. But coming forward to having it out now, and I think it was a good decision to actually wait to have it out 10 years later, because I was only young then. I mean, I was, you know, 21, 22 years old, and I think now is the best time to have it out.
And we should mention that as far as church members are concerned, there's over 500,000 of you guys around the world, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so we've got like, our website is inundated with traffic daily. I mean, we get something like 19,000, 20,000 hits a day on a website. The website crashes every time we do anything really big in the media, like when the book launch comes out in the UK, it's going to be big again. And it's just, it's crazy. The amount of people who love what we do and love the movement, I think, because it sparks something in people. It sparks imagination, it sparks magic, and it sparks a feeling of community through spirituality, where, you know, usually you'd be shunned for saying something like, oh, I want to be like a Jedi. But in this community, you're totally accepted. So I think that's what's cool about it.
Well, congratulations on the book. It's called Become the Force, 9 Lessons on How to Live as a Jediist Master. It is just out now. And thank you very much, Daniel, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure.
Daniel Morgan Jones, the CEO and founder of the Church of Jediism. His book is Become the Force, 9 Lessons on How to Live as a Jediist Master. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0430, and you'll find the links to their site, plus also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Dave Farrow about memory tournaments. Don't forget about it. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. A Florida creamery has defeated the state's efforts to brand its skim milk imitation milk. State officials claim it wasn't real milk because it didn't have added vitamins. Wait a minute, so milk coming from a cow isn't milk then because it doesn't have added vitamins? Think about that. Anyway, needless to say, the dairy offered to label the milk as not having added vitamins, but that wasn't good enough for state officials. So the case went to court, and I don't think anyone's surprised here, the dairy won. Florida taxpayers ended out with $20 million for the cost of the fight. But the idiot bureaucrats responsible probably aren't out a dime. So, I guess the taxpayers can cry over spilt money. Yeah. And according to New York authorities, Flora Stevens was missing for 42 years. Then the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office learned of some bones that had been found. Spoiler, they weren't hers. But the discovery prompted Detective Rich Morgan to query some databases and discovered that Stevens' Social Security number was being used. He and a partner drove to a Massachusetts nursing home where resident Flora Harris looked at an old ID card of Stevens's and said, "Me." Records show that Harris had been in nursing homes elsewhere, too, and it's not clear why she ever left Monticello, New York. Dementia limits her ability to communicate, and she has no living relatives. So the question now has to be asked, was she ever lost to anyone but the state? And a man accused of stealing a motorized shopping cart from an Alaska grocery store didn't get very far or go very fast before his low-speed getaway attempt was foiled by police. The battery-operated cart, with a basket mounted behind the handlebars, has a top speed of 1.9 miles per hour. Authorities say Rondell Tony Chinahook of Anchorage was charged with felony theft for attempting to take the cart early Tuesday from a Safeway store in Fairbanks. Police say they stopped Rondell while he was crossing a thoroughfare following a 10-minute joyride that consisted mostly of trying to leave the expansive store parking lot. Rondell was charged with felony theft of the $2,500 cart. You know, even OJ was going faster in his Ford Bronco. Not much faster, but faster. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the accidental tripping over a child's toy led to a gun being pulled during a dispute inside a grocery store in Reading, Pennsylvania. 60-year-old Galileo Francisco became upset after his wife tripped over a small shopping cart being pushed by a young child inside the C-Town supermarket. Francisco then pointed the gun at another customer before a manager pushed it away. RPD officers arrived as Francisco was checking out. They said he ignored all their commands and forcibly resisted their attempts to arrest him. Francisco was eventually taken into custody without incident and charged with possession of a weapon, recklessly endangering another person, resisting arrest, simple assault, and disorderly conduct. He was freed on $20,000 unsecured bail. You know, I've been in a supermarket on occasion when the fruit of somebody else's loins has pushed one of those mini shopping carts into the back of my Achilles tendon. While that is a pain that will set your mind free, at no point did I ever think to pull a gun. Not even once. Not even once. I'm just saying. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Memory expert Dave Farrow is back. He's currently in the process of organizing Farrow Memory Tournaments. It's an event that is open to the public, and Dave is looking to recruit students, teachers, professionals, and more. Just about anybody who is keen on wanting to challenge and improve their memory. Dave is on the line with us via Skype from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Dave.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program once again. It's always a pleasure to have a chance to talk with you. In the many times we've talked, one of the things I don't think we've discussed, and I think it's kind of timely, the largest part of the population is still the baby boomers. I'm on the tail end of that. And, of course, as the baby boomers get older, memory is of a concern to now a larger part of the population. Coupling that situation with the idea that so many people of the younger generation are so into their computers, so into Google, so into Alexa, it's like people don't have to remember things anymore. Is this becoming problematic?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, it's been proven in a lab. You can actually Google this, ironically enough. It's called the Google effect. Harvard and Columbia did studies on this. Shows that because we can search for information, have it at our fingertips, we're not forced to hold on to it. Even the act of holding on to a phone number in the old-fashioned address books, you know, where you'd look at a phone number and then you'd hold it in your head long enough for you to dial it in. Especially if you can think back to one of those rotary phones where it took you longer, you had to hold the number in your head for just those few seconds longer. That actually stimulated our memory. We've actually lost about 20% of our memory nationally over, you know, since the 80s, early 90s to today, mainly due to technology making things easier.
Is that something that is reversible or gone forever?
Oh, it's absolutely reversible, and the really exciting stuff is it seems to be reversible within within a very short period of time. People with memory training can see results within days, weeks of their natural memory. And also the memory training allows you to do some pretty amazing things almost instantly. You know, like I could teach you the technique on how to memorize strings of numbers, and then you would do, you know, not, you know, 20% more or 30% more, but you would do 10 times more memory for numbers than you did before I taught you that little trick. So it's I think that technology is kind of a double-edged sword. So it has, you know, kind of made our brains lazy. Our brains will definitely get lazy if we give them a chance to. But also the great technology in neuroscience has opened up doors to understand how our brains work and gives us opportunities to learn these strategies that can get us even farther.
Now, again, like I say, I'm the tail end of the baby boomers. So there were certain things that we did when we were in school that I find almost kind of sad now, because kids don't do that. I mean, if you ever go into a fast food restaurant or any service industry place, it seems to be that nobody can figure out, for instance, how to give change in their head. They look at me like I'm sort of some sort of wizard when I answer the question before they can get a calculator out.
It's almost hilarious from our perspective how quickly things have changed, you know. Because the advent of the internet, you're talking, you know, 1996, 1995, that sort of thing. That's not that long ago, yet it is so radically transformed our entire lives. And before then, I remember, you know, being in high school just like you, you know, using a calculator in school was this big faux pas. You know, some teachers embraced it, other teachers thought it was, you know, a gateway to evil, you know, in the education system. And now those conversations seem so adorable and quaint in hindsight, because not only do we have calculators, you know, there's talks about having, you know, tablets on every single desk. Many schools, you know, you have a school laptop for each student, and it's just a completely different world. It's a completely different way of looking at information. And, you know, instead of looking back, though, I do like to look forward, because there are a whole lot of opportunities. One of the greatest things that have happened is there's a large group of autodidactic learners. Even very young people today are teaching themselves skills. I do 3D modeling on the side as a hobby. I'm really into design and engineering, and I've done 3D printing and stuff. And I was very unique when I was starting to do that when I was younger. And now, you know, I'm finding, you know, 13, 14-year-olds that are doing 3D modeling that used to be university-level stuff. And the reason is because you can go on YouTube and learn a trick here and there. You can get some shareware and you can use it. And then you can, you know, go get somebody who has a 3D printer to print something out. And all of a sudden, you've got a cool thing for your cell phone. So, you know, technology has given us, you know, it has taken over so many brain functions that it has definitely made our brains lazy. But there are, you know, there are all these other benefits. And I think we are raising a generation of geniuses in a way, but it's going to be a much more diversified type of genius, not a traditional what we normally think of in the academic sense.
Well, you've been in the memory game for a long time. We've talked about this for years and years and years. So I'm just wondering, when you talk about how things have changed in this current generation, for instance, this current generation of youngsters who have grown up in the computer age, how does that change what you do in relationship to them?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I've gotten different requests over the years. Like, and you're right. I mean, my first memory course was on cassette tape. I kid you not. I actually sold got to be $500,000 worth of cassette tapes. So, you know, it was a decent course. And then, of course, you know, millions later in CDs and then DVDs, and now we have an online course, so we changed with the times. But the science really hasn't changed. Our brains haven't changed from being hunter-gatherers. That's one of the main principles behind memory, is that some of these principles don't change. But getting back to your question, what students have asked me for, yeah, I mean, it used to be that they would ask about spelling. That doesn't happen anymore because of spell check. Nobody seems to care about spelling, or they rely on technology for that. There's a lot of little things people rely on technology. It used to be back in the day people would ask me how to memorize phone numbers. That never comes up again anymore. But I get a lot more of the social stuff. People want to learn the technique, how I memorized a studio audience, all the names in a studio audience, that sort of thing. How do I avoid, you know, absent-minded or forgetful moments? How do you learn a skill faster? Things are definitely getting more competitive in our world today. So the person who can learn a software program faster than the guy next to them or girl next to them, then they're the one who get the promotion. So it's as simple as that. And the software products are changing all the time. So there are techniques to remember, you know, different, you know, to be able to absorb that information faster and retain it and be able to use it. So I think it's a very, you know, very practical thing.
I mentioned in the introduction the memory tournaments. When people take part in these, how long is it? Is it a full day? Is it a full weekend? What happens at a memory tournament?
Sure. So we started the memory tournaments as a way to give back, you know, to people. I you know, sold a lot of memory instructional programs, and I'm really proud of that. And I we've helped a lot of people. I've got letters from people who are doctors and lawyers today who said they would never have been able to pass their exams if it wasn't for my memory training, and other people who are, you know, not forgetful and everything. But there is actually, you know, competitions in memory that people do. I've participated in them. It's one of the reasons why I went for my Guinness record. And there's a small community of about 1,000 people around the world that do things like this. I'm actually going to be representing America, judging the World Memory Championships in China coming up next month. There's about 600 competitors there in China. You know, in America, we don't really have America and Canada, we don't really have a lot of a memory community going. So I'm trying to build that up. And one of the things we're doing are these competitions. So you can go to memorytournament.com. We have a competition coming up in Las Vegas. We're trying to appeal more to students, though, so we're trying to get more teachers to hold competitions at their school. You can actually do it as a fundraiser. We're trying to get you know, teachers to you know, start clubs in their schools, that sort of thing, and students to participate, PTAs as well. And just, you know, really go grassroots. And honestly, what we're also looking for is advice. You know, I'd love to hear feedback from teachers and students to how we can make this a better experience for them. How can we make this work for them? Because that's what it's all about. The idea is to take these techniques that we know work for students, improving test scores and everything, but give it to them in a fun, interactive format. And that's what the memory game does.
When you talk about students, is it similar to, say, learning a musical instrument? The earlier you get them, the better?
Absolutely. The earlier you get it, the better. Mainly because students often develop some bad habits when it comes to study skills. They think they're good habits, but they end up, you know, relying on coffee or stress or, you know, whatever to push themselves through some studying and memory work. And there really is a better way. The problem is when they get to the college university level, very often these students are going to fall behind if they don't have a strategy, because the sheer volume of information at most, you know, most like STEM programs or even, you know, getting a communications degree or going through a cross-curriculum grouping, any sort of academic environment at the college university level, there is so much information to learn and memorize that sort of studying, cramming, stressed out thing that worked for you in high school doesn't work anymore. And it's really tough to talk to these students because they were the top of their class in high school and they're falling behind in college. So they don't think of themselves as a bad student. So they don't think they need help until they really, really need help. And I speak on the college circuit. I travel around from colleges to colleges trying to reach these students. And, you know, it's heartbreaking, but, you know, we're making progress. A lot of times we get through. And when they really do learn strategies for studying, not just equate it to an ego thing or oh, we're lazy or they get down on themselves because they can't do it. When they actually start thinking in terms of strategies, a whole world opens up. They're able to essentially choose whatever grades they want to have because they just have to allocate a certain amount of strategy for that, and they can memorize anything that they want.
So it's fascinating stuff. You say that you're looking to get teachers and students primarily involved in this, and they can find out more information by going to memorytournament.com, correct?
Yeah, actually the plural is easier to get to, memory tournaments. We have both, but I think one redirects to the other. So memorytournaments.com, because we want to have a bunch of these, a lot of tournaments.
Excellent. Dave, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for being on with us once again.
Thank you very much, Peter. It's always a pleasure.
Memory expert Dave Farrow. You can check out his website at memorytournaments.com. Don't forget it. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0430, and you'll find the link. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Here's some sobering news from the world of medicine. A practicing cardiologist who also teaches at one of the top medical schools in the country says that the type of medicine you receive is too often being dictated by fear rather than facts. The reason for this is the amount of time American physicians now spend defending themselves from lawsuits rather than tending to patients. Compare physicians in America with physicians in Europe, for example. According to a study by one of the leading survey research companies in the United States, 99% of American physicians in high-risk specialties will face a lawsuit at least once in their careers. In Europe, that number is only 20%. Let's be fair, there's no evidence that doctors in the U.S. are any worse than doctors in Europe. It's our legal system that allows this. So, doctors order more tests to cover themselves in case they're sued, and the cost of healthcare we all pay skyrockets. It doesn't need to be this way. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And as fall descends on us, as we've just recently set our clocks back, let's welcome once again Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City, where he and the city never sleeps. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, hello. Live from the streets of New York. Boy, have we had excitement around here.
Yes, I understand. Apparently there was a great deal some people could get on refrigerators.
Yeah, well, it's funny when you say it that way, but it's really the crux of the story. We have what's called the Housing Authority in New York City. That's these big rent-subsidized apartment houses. The rent is set by the number of people in your household and your income. It's federally funded, and it was a method of getting rid of slums. In most cities, they're the most horrendous, horrible places that there are. New York, on the other hand, they're pretty good here. They're taken care of and all of that. But obviously, the security is not too well because some special investigators from that department wanted to see whether or not they could come here in the middle of the day and take away some of the refrigerators. Just, you know, say, hi, we're here to take away your refrigerator. And so they'd show up at the building and they'd say, hi, we're here to take away your refrigerator. And they take it away, showing that there really was no security in the building. And, of course, now the Housing Authority is a little bit embarrassed. They're going to get their refrigerators back. But listen, I can give you a good price if you don't mind one that fell off the truck.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of, the fact that it might have fallen off the truck. Well, so we have a problem, apparently, with the Housing Authority. I also understand the mail delivery isn't that great either.
Yeah, well, and I'm being kind of harsh about it, because if you figure the millions and millions of pieces of mail that are delivered here every day, I guess it isn't so terrible, but it is getting worse and worse. And the main cause seems to be, or the main problem seems to be, putting the mail in the wrong mailbox. So in other words, if you're in 6E, you're ending up getting the mail for 6F. And if 6E was waiting for that letter, well, they're going to wait until you come home and open up your box. And, you know, it's an interesting thing because these buildings, these apartment houses are so big that some of the mailmen, that's their route. You know, they don't go out onto the street. They're responsible for taking care of just the building. So in that context, I guess I shouldn't be complaining about it, but it has been deteriorating. There's no question about it.
And that's just driving people into the arms of going paperless and doing everything electronically, and that means less and less mail in the future. Like, for instance, I know this is kind of off topic, but, you know, the holiday season is coming up. I understand, not just in our country, but in your country, there are less and less people sending out, you know, holiday or Christmas cards.
Yeah, well, they do. There's electronic emails and electronic greeting cards and all of that. Part of that, I guess you could blame on the post office. But as I say, on the other hand, in all fairness, I think when the guy who invented the post office so many years ago in France, I don't think he ever envisioned there being a city where on one given day there could be 20 pieces of mail.
Yeah, exactly. In any case, we've talked about New York City's Housing Authority. We've talked about getting your mail delivered to your house. How about those who don't have a home? I understand New York City's Department of Homeless Services has a new pilot program.
I've got to tell you, it's one of those things that nobody in the city knew was even going on, and now that we found out it's going on, everybody here is flabbergasted. What they've been doing is they've been going up to homeless people, this is the Department of Homelessness, and saying to them, you know, you don't really like living on the streets of New York. It's hot, it's cold, it's uncomfortable. So tell you what we're going to do. If you leave the city, we'll transport you to any place in the United States you want to go to, and we'll pay you rent in that city for a year.
Wow.
Which is absolutely crazy.
Wow.
So what I would suggest that you do is you come down to New York City. I'll loan you a blanket so you can lay on the streets of New York. And then when they come up to you, you'll tell them where you want to go. They'll take you back to where you want to go and pay your rent for a year. It's nuts.
Who came up with this idea?
Mayor de Blasio, our tree-hugging commie pinko mayor.
Whom I understand one of the newspapers did not endorse for an upcoming election.
Yeah, the Daily News. I mean, just to show you how bad the guy is, the Daily News is part of the Democratic Party. I mean, it really is. I mean, everything that it says is Democrat, 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 which I don't think is the function of a newspaper, maybe in their editorial columns, but certainly not in their news columns. And for them to come out and say, don't vote for him, is just absolutely amazing on two counts. Number one, he is the sitting mayor. And number two, the election day's in another couple of days. And number two, it's a Democratic-controlled city. I mean, they have a very nice, and I think probably a very qualified lady who's running on the Republican Party. She's going to be lucky if she gets four votes, which is unfortunate, because I think she's a lot better than de Blasio. But in this city, it's a Democratic Party or nothing.
Meanwhile, I understand that there was a Starbucks, just one Starbucks, that was closed for a while because they were hit by the health department?
Yeah, it was kind of an unusual thing again, because Starbucks is pretty good. After all, it's a chain, and they watch what they're doing. But it was so filthy and so dirty, it was on Broadway, that it got closed down because of the health inspection. We have a system here in New York where every restaurant gets rated, not by ambience, not by menu, not by service, but by cleanliness. And they just got hit, and they got closed down until they cleaned it up. It's a very good system, and it works pretty well. So as a travel advisory for any of you nice folks that are coming to New York, don't go into a restaurant unless it has an A on the window.
Meanwhile, we go from coffee or lattes to road apples. I saw this interesting little bit on your website at Gabby.com. What's this story about the sanitation department?
Well, the sanitation department in most cities was set up originally to take care of the horse droppings. I mean, that was the intention. They weren't thinking about taking away garbage and trash and recycling. So that's the history behind, especially the New York City sanitation department. But as you can see from the picture on my website, Gabby.com, the sanitation department is, how shall we put it, slacking a little bit. And so now we're getting these little mounds of horse doo-doo on the streets of New York. And I guess the moral of the story is, if you're coming to my city, don't walk around barefoot. And now if somebody's wondering, what in the world are we doing with horses, there's actually a lot of horses in New York. The cops have horses. The carriage rides have horses. So we may be a concrete jungle, but we have a lot of horses and a lot of horse. You know what?
So forget the movie Barefoot in the Park or the Barefoot Contessa is what you're saying.
Exactly right. I wouldn't walk around barefoot until they straighten up their act.
Boy, even without the horses, I think if I were walking around barefoot in New York City, I'd need a tetanus shot at the end of the day.
Well, it's not so much New York City, but it is. It's true. And every once in a while, I'll see somebody, some mommy with her little kid walking barefoot, and it just sends a chill up my spine. But, I mean, that's just about almost any place.
Meanwhile, I understand that a councilman who represents Coney Island has drafted legislation to close an existing loophole. What loophole are we talking about here?
I'm not sure.
I think it involves...
You're being too subtle with your segue.
I think it has something to do with parole officers.
Okay, yes. In New York City, two cops raped a girl that they had arrested.
Wow.
Or forced her to have sex with them.
Right.
And out of that, which was terrible in itself, came the fact that it's not against the law for them to do that, as astounding as it is. If a correction officer does it, it's against the law, you know, like in a jail or something. But if a cop has arrested somebody and they sexually molest them, it actually isn't against the law. And as I say, that's an astounding fact. So the city is going to be changing the law so that if at least you're going to get arrested by a New York City policeman, he won't be permitted to do the mufky-fufky with you in the back of the patrol car.
Wow. That's weird. That's just weird.
Well, this is a weird city I live in, but I love it.
I have no comeback for that. I'll just go to the next story, and the next story being speaking of lawmakers, a state lawmaker from Queens is trying to close the curtain on certain events that take place at massage parlors.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's some massage parlors that are straight, and there are massage parlors that aren't. And I guess you could say almost it's 50-50. And what she wants to do is she wants to make it absolutely positively illegal to have sex in a massage parlor. Go rent a hotel room is her attitude. And I think that's right, too, because it's not the cleanest endeavor in the world to do it in a massage parlor. So that's going to knock out some of the bad girls. But at the same time, in my means here to defend them, there are a lot of decent massage parlors you would go to for physical therapy, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you know, you could just wrap it all up with the other stories that you mentioned earlier. I mean, if they're worried about cleanliness, they can bring in the sanitation department and also the health department. Problem
well,
solved.
This is what happened when you have big cities. You see, God probably meant Earth to have little towns, you know, with 50 people in them. I don't think he envisioned that these cities, like New York, would grow up to have millions and millions. And that in itself, of course, causes lots of problems.
And when you have millions and millions, of course, you get to see all the celebrities. You always seem to spot celebrities. And I know in the last couple of weeks, you've seen some big ones, a former godfather and a former first lady.
Yeah, well, in two different situations. Pacino was a couple of weeks ago, and you're talking about Michelle Obama. But it's interesting who she was with, okay? It wasn't that she was by herself. She was with the Barefoot Contessa.
See, we're going...
Now, I know you're the master of all trivia. Who am I talking about?
Ina Garten, who has a lot of cookbooks out.
I knew it. See, this guy knows it all. I couldn't fool him.
But
yeah, most people don't know what I'm talking about. But if you go onto the web and you look up Ina Garten, you'll see she has a very popular, very nice show. The reason she was with her, as I found out, is that they're looking for an apartment for the Obamas because the Obamas want to live in New York on the groovy East Side, but probably not that far north on the groovy East Side because the groovy East Side is groovy from about 40 to 96th Street. After 96th Street, that becomes Harlem, which, by the way, is not a terrible place. But I just have the feeling that our former president is not going to be living in Harlem.
Well, you have Bill Clinton's office in Harlem, don't you?
Yeah, and you also have a guy named Rangel, the most evil congressman we have.
You're not a fan of Chuck Rangel, are you?
Oh, give me a break.
Well, that's the story for another day. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program, sir. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is gabby.com. And they can send you an email, peter@gabby.com. I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you. Everybody have a great day. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. I've got the idiot of the day coming your way in just a little bit, but before we get to that, one more Stuff File news story that I'd like to share with you right here, right now. A Florida couple who ordered some storage totes from Amazon said their package arrived with a little something extra, 65 pounds of marijuana. The Orlando woman said she and her fiancé ordered 4 27-gallon storage totes from Amazon recently so they could put some items in storage. She said they were immediately suspicious when the packages arrived. They were extremely heavy, heavier than you'd think from ordering 4 empty bins, the woman said, who did not want to be identified by name. She said the cause of the extra weight became clear from the smell when they opened the boxes. When the first officer got here, she was in disbelief, the woman said. The boxes contained the plastic bins the couple had ordered, but the totes themselves contained boxes filled with the illicit weed. The marijuana was turned over to police, and the couple spent more than a month attempting to get answers from Amazon in a series of email exchanges. Amazon said it is cooperating with law enforcement to investigate the unusual incident. Meanwhile, I'm sure there are some out there who, when they heard the story, remarked, "Dude, they can deliver that now?" Well, you know, Jeff Bezos is trying to corner the market on delivering just about everything, so who knows? Anyway, boys and girls, it's the moment you've all been waiting for as we wrap things up here on this edition of the Stuff File program. Yes, it's time once again for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Authorities say a man who was in a Colorado court for violating his bond on a drug charge is in even more trouble after a wad of cocaine fell from his hat while he was in front of the judge. 43-year-old Juan Jose Vidrio Bibresca was standing next to two other defendants at an Eagle County District Court podium when he took off his hat and a square of folded paper fell out. A police officer watched the paper filled with cocaine fall to the floor, and after reviewing surveillance video, authorities determined it fell from Juan's hat. Juan was then walked to the county jail. He was charged with narcotics possession and another bond violation. Now, why, oh why, would you walk into a courtroom on a drug charge and be carrying cocaine in your hat? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0430. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0430. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.